Sunday, July 23rd, my July philosophy is in full sway. I am taking the biggest part of today, even overnight, to do something purely self-indulgent that I wanted to do for a year. I'm going to the Paladura Canyon to see the outdoor pageant. I was up early and dressed and driving alone to St. Barnabas Episcopal Church. I hadn't been here since Easter at least or earlier, and I've missed it. But alas, the Reverend MacAllister was not there, a lay reader in his place, and it was a pleasant but uneventful church service. And then home to meet Roy White by 10:30 for 3.5 very industrious hours of work on the house. Explanations, decisions, moving around our little mock-up of Lyndon's lavatory in his bath, walking around in the yard to see how much you could see inside to better gauge how we should drape the windows. We took time out for lunch, and then at 2:00, I said goodbye to him and turned myself over to my neighbor, Mrs. Frederick Berg, in the hope of a miracle, because I certainly cannot go to Amarillo looking like I do, especially not with Lucy, who is a severe critic. Lucy and Pat and Lynn and Miss Cafella arrived at the ranch about 3:45. We loaded onto the King Air, complete with baby bed. Lynn was a perfect traveler. It's amazing to remember that it takes a long time to get to Amarillo from anywhere. I could not believe it when I was told that it would be a 2.5-hour flight from the ranch. Why, it only takes 3 hours to go to Washington. With good luck and good winds, we made it in 2 hours. And just as we approached Amarillo, I looked down and saw this great gash in the earth, this tortured, winding cut that must be Paladura Canyon. We landed at an airport for private planes. And there was Joe, all smiles, with his very young-looking mother and father. But it was not at their house we would stay. We drove straight to his grandmother's, the Neil Johnsons, arriving a little past 6. Much about Amarillo was a surprise to me. There were so many trees. You might almost have been in a New England town with elms lacing above the residential streets, especially on the street where Joe's grandmother lived. It was a beautiful, elegant house. The garden was walled with a fountain. Joe himself had done the lighting in the trees. They'd been planted 11 years ago in a formal squared pattern, and below them was a delightful sitting area, comfortable chaise lounges, and after we had gotten little Lynn settled in his room, everybody bending over and admiring him, amazed at his size, at his serenity, it was here to the garden that we all came, and I spent a very interesting hour listening to Joe's grandmother. She had come to Amarillo as a child of 4 with her family from Missouri. Her father had brought his cattle and bought land, a lot of land, at $1.75 an acre. But the first winter was almost a disaster. They'd planned on keeping the cattle outdoors. There was only one barn, and there was blizzard after blizzard, and most of the cattle had died. She remembered that they had shoveled out a path from their house to the barn, and the snow had been piled up so high on both sides that she, a little girl of 4 or maybe 5, could not see over the top of it as she'd walked down the tunnel. And then later on, when she'd grown up and married, and she and her husband were living 17 miles out from Amarillo, her husband had strung up a telephone line on the top strand of the barbed wire fence, and it was by this way that he had telephoned the doctor when she was about to have her first baby. Much later, her husband and one of their sons, then a young man of about 20, had been killed in an airplane accident, and it was after that that she herself had learned to fly a plane and a helicopter and had managed their big ranch. None of them ever mentioned how many acres or one word about money, but it was very obvious that there was a good deal of both. I remember Jay Taylor saying laughingly to me at the White House, "Linda Bird ought to like that boy. He owns half the panhandle." It was a very interesting evening. We went in to dinner. She had planned, and I gather had cooked, some of the dishes. It was most wonderful fried chicken, sweet, fresh, tender corn brought in from one of their ranches, fresh black-eyed peas, the same, ripe red tomatoes, and cabbage. This she had especially cooked, her own recipe, and I never tasted anything like it before. I ate with utter abandon, and there was a delicious homemade ice cream. Their house was beautifully done, but I wish that it had told more the story of their pioneer days. Because 65 years ago in Amarillo, one was a pioneer. Pictures, objects from those days I wished for but did not see. Perhaps they are present at a house on one of her ranches. It was still broad daylight, a little past 8, when we started to drive out to Canyon, Texas, and then on to the Paladura Canyon. Joe at the wheel and as the raconteur. And what's more, I was surprised and pleased at the presence of trees all over Amarillo. Trees seem to be a valuable property. And then on the highway heading out, I found it to be a four lane with a broad median strip in which, scattered every block or so, there was a group of trees, 4, 5, 6 trees, then a long bare space, and then another group of 4 or 5. It broke the monotony of the flat plains. It was green and welcome to the eye against the landscape of barrenness, because it is a barren land, except for deep wells and irrigation, and then it becomes marvelously fertile. And at their ranches, fruit trees flourish, including apples of the pale yellow, delicious variety. Canyon, we drove through the campus. I believe it's called Western State University. And it was obvious that everyone was very proud of their museum. Quite modern in architecture, handsome, particularly good for its Indian artifacts, they told me, and its record of the civilization of Indian days and its geology. And then, as we approached Paladura Canyon, we saw some of the heritage of the CCC camps. They had put roads there, and a lodge or two for tourists. Everywhere across the land, it seems to me, I see tracks of those early Roosevelt days, Depression-born, heading toward art and recreation. Very interesting, but just a sort of a landmark, and those tracks have almost been washed out in the rush of events of the 3 decades since. Now, as the road wound around the edge of this great canyon, we came upon marvelous views and attractive California-like houses clinging to the cliffs, taking advantage of the great panorama. And then we descended into the canyon, and just about dark, reached the site of the pageant, the Paladura Canyon State Park, an amphitheater at the base of a great cliff, an almost natural setting, amplified a bit by man. As we got out of the car, there were a few cameras, the director of the pageant, a city official or two, and a few youngsters wanting autographs, but precious little fanfare. All Joe's family had been so cooperative in wanting to make it just a quiet, personal visit. On the way in, we met S.B. Wittenberg, who runs the local paper. Very conservative Republican, I think, but a friend of Lyndon's. And, surprisingly, the contractor who is head of the whole National Association of Contractors, and who will be leading the drive to collect money for Walt Whitman Park, which is right out in front of their headquarters in Washington, and which they will probably landscape if the drive succeeds. So I had the opportunity to thank him personally. There was a sprinkling of Joe's friends and Johnson's friends in front of us and behind us, and introductions as we settled into our seat, but really about the quietest entrance I can remember making. Mrs. Johnson had brought coats, and I couldn't imagine needing a coat in Texas in July, although I remembered the old phrase about there's nothing between Amarillo and the North Pole except a barbed wire fence. Later in the evening, I found it very pleasant to slip into it. The pageant began about 9 and lasted until midnight. It was too long. The script by Paul Green was disappointingly rather pedestrian, but God's own setting was magnificent beyond words. That great cliff towering into the dark, and above it at the very beginning, an Indian on horseback, suddenly spotlighted, and you saw him standing there against the sky, and it shook you. From beginning to end, the lighting was wonderful, especially a summer thunderstorm that practically had me reaching for an umbrella. With the thunder crashing through the canyon and the lightning flashing from side to side, and there was the lonely, weird howl of a coyote. The young city girl was listening to it while she was being courted by the determined young farmer, Sodbuster, they called him. All of the actors were purely local, with the exception of about 4 who had some Broadway experience. And the rest, in a cast of about 50 or more, were students at the small regional college we'd passed through. They got credits in drama or in some department for their work here during the summer, I believe. And Joe himself had done the lighting, had actually designed it, rigged it up, and if I could guess, had gotten the money for it from his grandmother. During the intermission, he took me up into the control room and introduced me to all the boys who run the lights, with whom he was obviously on very close and affectionate terms, and tried to explain to me something about the lights. It's only the effect that I understand. His mother had told me that when he was 10 years old, he used to follow the electrician around the house, watching everything he did and helping him do it, and she used to worry for fear he was going to get electrocuted before he ever grew up. And also, during the intermission, the director of the pageant went to the stage and made a brief, graceful little speech, thanking me for my work in beautification across the country and presenting me with a golden triangle. At each performance, they give a small iron triangle, a sort of a miniature gong called the ranch hands in to dinner, common artifact on most any ranch. Then give this to the person who came from farthest away. Almost never did it get given to anyone within the boundaries of the United States, because at every performance, there would be some traveling student from Pakistan or Iran or Greece. This gave me a little surge of pride, because though it was no great dramatic achievement, this pageant, still it had the pulse and the feel of our West and of pioneer days, and without a doubt, an unforgettably magnificent setting. Toward the end of the pageant, the moon began to rise, and since we were down in the bottom of the canyon, it was very interesting. It flooded us, rather like a giant floodlight. But it had to get quite high over the horizon before we could see the moon itself. At the end of the performance, we filed into a big barn-like building, and there all the cast was assembled. And I went around shaking hands with everybody. The children, in their delightful costumes, added especially to the gaiety and charm of it, making real the pictures of the pioneer family as they bounced along in their covered wagon or went to a square dance. It must have been nearly 1 o'clock by the time we reached the Johnson residence, but we sat down in the garden long enough to enjoy the ice cream I had passed it up at dinner, and I heard Joe and Patrick making plans to get up at 4:30 and fly out to one of their ranches and have an early breakfast and fly back so we could leave at 8 o'clock the next morning. I, too, yearned to see their ranch, but not enough to get up at 4:30. I was satisfied that I had done this. Among Linda's and Lucy's friends, I'm especially fond of Joe, one of the most unassuming, eager to help, natural, sunny-natured young men I've ever known, and so easy to be around. And I found his whole family the same way. Apparently, being very wealthy has not taught them to feel self-important or to behave guardedly. And I find it delightful that Joe works almost every night all summer long, handing the lights himself at this pageant.